Have you ever loved someone so much that you followed them around and talked endlessly about them to all your friends and family? That's how much we love rhododendron, a quirky and amazing genus of flowering plants with a deep human history and an incredible ecological legacy. Follow along on our adventures as we learn about the remarkable things that folks all around the world have done for the love of rhododendron. Episode 8, Shake the World Gently. In this episode, we meet Mike Stewart, president of the Van Veen Heritage Garden in Portland, Oregon. We learn how this newly formed nonprofit organization is carrying on the extraordinary legacy of the Van Veen family, three generations of horticultural pioneers who dedicated themselves to learning about rhododendrons, devising new propagation techniques, and generously sharing their plants and their knowledge. In doing so, they turned their little corner of Portland into a veritable sanctuary of rhododendrons and built a huge community of friends, evoking the wisdom of Mahatma Gandhi, in a gentle way, you can shake the world. Hi, welcome back to For the Love of Rhododendron. This is Juliana, and I'm here today with Christina Woodward. Hi, Christina.
Hello, Juliana and everyone out there.
We are really excited to be talking to you today and introducing you to our guest, Mike Stewart. Mike, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I've been a member of the Rhododendron Society now for, I guess, probably 40 years. And currently what's keeping me busy is the Van Veen Nursery. I'm the president of the Van Veen Heritage Garden and manager of the nursery. So after 40 years of being in the nursery business, now I'm driving to Portland to help out with that project.
Wonderful. And we are really excited to talk to you about Van Veen Nursery. That's going to be the focus of our conversation today. But we're also going to want to get some of your rhododendron stories. So we'll save that for the end. But I think Christina is going to start us off with our first question for Mike. So take it away, Christina.
I'm really happy to do that. And we're just so pleased to have you take the time to speak with us, Mike. Van Veen Nursery has several generation history, and we really would like to know a little bit more about it. Can you tell us some of the major points in that history?
Sure. It's an amazing story. It started with Ted Van Veen's father, Theodore Van Veen, in 1926. A Dutchman came here and started a nursery in the southeast section of Portland. And he was a landscaper, small-time landscaper. And out of necessity, he started taking cuttings out of cemeteries, from what the stories are, to start propagating rhododendrons because people were getting interested in those. There was a fair amount of rhododendrons in Portland from the World's Fair that was held in 1905. It was called the Lewis and Clark Exposition. And plants came here from Belgium into Portland, and there's still these magnificent plantings in these circle neighborhoods in the Van Veen area, planted full of old rhododendrons. So he was getting cuttings from those and cemeteries. So he started his business, and along came the Bonneville Power and the Bonneville Dam. And suddenly there was a lot of electricity being produced in the Pacific Northwest. They even say in the archives at the dam there that the people wondered what they would ever do with all this electricity out here. So Theodore Van Veen was instrumental in developing the heat system, electric heat system, cable system for rooting rhododendrons. I can't say honestly that he invented it, but he certainly did out here on the West Coast. It was really the start of it here. Ted, his son, was working for IBM company. And when Theodore died in 1961, Ted retired from IBM and took over the nursery. And many, many people remember Ted Van Veen. He was really known as the ambassador of rhododendrons throughout the world. Anywhere you went, If you mentioned Ted Van Veen, there would be a smile on somebody's face and say, I knew him, or I knew of him, and I wish I knew him, that sort of comment. In 2000, anyway, he really developed the Van Veen Nursery into the large operation that it turned out to be in the 60s and 70s. They had about 100 acres of field rhododendrons down in the Willamette Valley. And that's when I first got to know him, about 50 years ago now, and went there to learn more about propagating rhododendrons. And at that time, my parents were buying yearlings from him. I remember sometime in the 70s, he advertised his nursery as being the largest exclusive rhododendron nursery in the world. And I'm sure there were larger nurseries, but they were growing other things other than rhododendrons as well. But that's all that they ever produced. I remember also the chalkboard on the door when you went in his office, listing the number of cuttings they had done for the summer and what their goals were. And it was always around 400,000 cuttings. Goal. So that facility where we are now in Portland was their propagation facility and still is. The field operation is long gone. It's now the Wooden Shoe Bulb Farm, and they grow cannabis and all kinds of other things that modern nurseries are doing these days. But that was establishment of the day was to grow many, many cuttings and yearlings, especially yearlings for people like my parents and other people that were in the nursery business, the rhododendron nursery business. So when the field operation finally closed, the Van Veen Nursery is now just turned into a custom propagation. We only have a couple of commercial operations that are buying cuttings from us. And we'll talk more about what's happened there, I guess, later in this conversation. So his daughter, Kathy, of course, took over the nursery, and she was their head propagator. She passed away in 2017. And at that point, she willed the nursery to the Portland chapter of the American Rhododendron Society. And so we created a new corporation as a 501c3 called the Van Veen Heritage Garden. So that's a little bit of the history of how it got started. They were all wonderful people and did an awful lot for rhododendron production around the world and being, as I said, the ambassadorship. What he did in terms of spreading the good word about rhododendrons was unmatchable.
That is a really charming and touching story, because it's the story of people who cared about something and worked at it their whole lives for the benefit of everyone around them. That's really, it's kind of amazing to think about 50 years later, the impact that they have had. And I'm just wondering, my question to you is, can you tell us a little bit about how important Van Veen Nursery is today? I'm only fairly new to rhodos, and they're one of the first institutions that I heard about. And like you said, not just the individuals, but the institution has a reputation that precedes it. So can you talk a little bit about why Van Veen Nursery has been so important in rhododendrons? You mentioned the cuttings techniques, but there's been a lot of other dimensions too.
Yes, there certainly are a lot of other dimensions. And I think you mentioned the passion part of it. And Ted Van Veen had that passion, and it still exists. The reputation of the Van Veen Nursery still exists under that same thought. The passion for growing rhododendrons, the passion for disseminating information about rhododendrons and teaching others about these wonderful plants. So it continues today. His legacy really is, you can see throughout Portland, the Crystal Springs Rhododendron Garden was developed really by early time rhododendron people, but the Van Veens donated so many plants and so much time and resources, money resources as well, to that garden. So the other important thing about the Van Veen Nursery is that they have been the receivers of many, many, many brand new hybrids that hybridizers have created throughout time. And they still are. That really is their primary business. People create a new plant and they need it rooted. They need to see if it's going to be a good plant. And so that's where they go. That's still where they go is Van V Nursery. And in they come, we receive cuttings from all over the world of different sizes and shapes. Some are, you know, very well taken cuttings, some aren't, you know, it's a real challenge. But fortunately, Kathy Van Veen taught her methods of rooting onto the same crew that's been there for 20 some years, both of them. We have two propagators and then one office person. So they know the system. Kathy and I used to kid a lot because at Dover Nursery, we did cuttings in the summertime. Third week in July is when we started. And Van Veen started theirs in the fall. So I would always call Kathy, as I did almost every day, and say, so how are the cuttings going? And she would say, well, we're just beginning. And I would say, we just ended. But there were two different ways of doing them. And I was always amazed by how successful they were at taking later cuttings, and especially deciduous azalea cuttings, which are widely known to be cuttings that you do when they're very, very soft. But Kathy could take them in the fall when they were hard. And, you know, we would talk about, well, what's this variety we need? We're not having such good luck doing it. And she would say, oh, it doesn't root very well from the middle of September to the second or first week in October. But if you wait till after that, now you'll have success. But she knew the timing of things that worked and didn't work. And yes, it was all about timing with the Van Veens. And it's still just every time I'm with Olivia and Donato, the propagators there, I learned something new too.
Yes. You know, Mike, it was known about Kathy. It was said about Kathy that she could take a pencil and root it. So her fame was quite widespread.
Yes, we have a picture of roots on a pencil in the office. And Kathy and I used to do seminars on rooting cuttings to show people that there are many ways to do them. I would show the early, she would show the late forms. And for a while, I had a piece of rebar that I had glued some roots on so I could say, hey, we can root a rebar. Yeah, but we can root a pencil. So we had great fun with it. And of course, Kathy was frugal. She didn't want to spend, she used bags over and over again and washed them. And I would say, go to Costco and buy some new bags for crying out loud. And, oh, no. We want to put our money into rooting rhododendrons. We don't want to spend our money, frivolously. And Ted was somewhat the same way. Great, great people that had a passion for what they did and they knew what they were doing. Very, very well. The other valuable thing about the property there is that it houses about an acre and a half or maybe 2 acres of really heritage rhododendrons, things you don't see much around anymore. Because one of the things that Kathy always did, and I don't think this is secret, is that when someone would send in 100 cuttings of something, she would save 3 or 4 for herself. And so that collection was a great idea to preserve that gene pool of whatever was being produced in case they were lost in the mail or whatever when they got sent back. So there's there's about 3,000 varieties of rhododendrons on the property.
Wow.
That is amazing.
Yeah. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. What color truss does a pencil have?
It only grows roots. It doesn't grow flowers. we're not to that stage yet.
So it's quite limited.
I would say it would have to be a yellow.
But actually, that leads me to another question, Mike. Actually, two questions. Was Kathy always in the business, or is this did she develop the expertise upon her father's death when she took over?
She was involved with the nursery since childhood. She went off to college and got her degree. And I'm sorry, I can't tell you the exact name of that degree, but Ted, I always knew Kathy was there. When I went there, she was kind of a person out in the greenhouses. And I told Ted one time, because I had met Kathy on a bus, a tour of some garden thing that she was on. And it was rare for her to go out. And I said to Ted one day, I'd like to get Kathy involved in the Portland chapter and invite her to be on the board of directors. And he said, oh, no, she's too busy. She's way too busy. I'm going to go talk to her anyway. From that day on, we had a relationship that was somewhat unique. If I asked her to do something, she asked me to do something. So we were always trading back and forth. The first request was, will you be on the board of directors? And she said, do you have chocolate candy? And I said, sure. My sister from Germany just sent me a whole box of it. I'll bring down a box. She said, you bring me the box and then I'll say yes. And after that, it was always that way. Some trade for this, trade for that, with a big smile and a laugh. So yeah, she'd been there a long, long time and was always kind of in the background until just before Ted passed away.
Mm-hmm. So now she was always interested then, you know, that we know now. But how did she develop the expertise, for instance? How would she treat a hybrid compared to a species? Are there different techniques for propagation of those two types of plants?
There's a great difference in all of them, and then there's a great similarity as well. So you start with a similarity and work your way out from there, always recording your failures. That's really very, very important, is never repeat the failure. And so I learned a lot from them when I was getting into the nursery business in their record keeping. Boxes and boxes of cards on when they rooted such and such plant, how many survived, you know, how many had good roots a year later. And that was so, so valuable, because they would say, well, look at, we took 100 cuttings of Autumn Gold, one of their plants they developed, and we only got 50 cuttings. Well, they would change the timing on it, and they had records. I could still go into the file cabinets down there and find temperature recordings going back 50 years, every day, what the temperature was and what the rainfall was. Unfortunately, all of it's on paper, little cards, files after files after files. I mean, it'd take forever to get them digitized, but it was trial and error. Of course, they reached out to find other people that had done things too, but keep in mind, they were pioneers in a lot of this stuff on the West Coast. I'm certain that they traded information from people all over. And one of the things about Van Veen's was they were very willing to pass on their knowledge to anyone who asked. And that's generally, I have found over the years to be true with many of the nursery people around the world. They're very helpful.
Well, she certainly had an impact on the industry and definitely has enhanced the reputation and the work that Van Veen Nursery does. So can you just elaborate a little bit more on what are the recent developments of that enterprise since Kathy died?
Well, yes, of course. We realized that rooting rhododendron cuttings on a cusp is pretty hard to do successfully from the financial endpoint. There's just not enough cuttings being produced to make that business financially viable. So we have expanded that into container-grown rhododendrons. And I guess we have about 25,000 containers now produced in the last couple of years. The transformation is really kind of amazing when you see some of the pictures. The nursery, of course, I mentioned the Van Veen's were pretty frugal. Most of the greenhouses are built of wood. And of course, after 30 years in the Northwest, 2x4s don't last very long. So they had been doing a lot of repairing. And since I've gotten there, we've actually torn down some greenhouses, replaced them with brand new steel structure greenhouses that are more suitable for container growing. So that's the big change. The other really exciting thing is that we received the Bovee collection of Varroa rhododendrons. And some of the species went up to the Species Foundation, and we got all the hybrids in and some of the species. So we have about 170 different varieties of Varroas, which is an amazing collection in the United States.
Wow.
And we have now produced 2,000 yearlings of them. Excuse me, 1,000 yearlings. And then just last week, we took another 1,000 cuttings. We found that they root very easily this time of year. I would say within 60 days, we'll have a pretty good set of roots on these next 1,000. So tomorrow we have our first advisory committee meeting from a couple of people will be on Zoom, and I've gathered together people that know more about it than I do, which is pretty easy to do. And we're working on our strategy for producing more and producing and shipping indoor rhododendrons. Rhododendrons that grow inside that will bloom for several months. So that's our next venture.
Mike, I have to interject here. This is so exciting because, as you know, the Next Gen program reaches out to a younger generation. And one of the issues for the younger generation is they don't have gardens. They don't have houses with gardens. So where will they be growing their rhododendrons if they're interested? So now this introduction of the Vireas is just so exciting because it is a viable option. So yeah, congratulations to Van Veen's.
I'm very, very excited about it. And it's really funny. I've been telling people in our chapter, you know, that are interested, that this new challenges are wonderful. It's great for us to reach out and learn something new and go for it. This is a new challenge. We don't know how successful we'll be yet, but we're going to do everything we can. Fortunately, this collection from Bovies was absolutely amazing. Like I say, there really aren't any other organizations that are producing like we are. The Species Foundation, I was up there the other day to look at theirs, and they have a very nice collection of species. And they tell me that anytime they grow them, they're sold. People are interested in these different looking plants that are exceptionally beautiful.
So I have a question about that. So the Vireas are a group of rhododendrons that a lot of people actually aren't familiar with. I think us rhododendron nerds, they've kind of taken Roto World by storm. But Vireas are epiphytic, right? Meaning that they in nature would grow upon another plant. So similar to an orchid, correct?
Yes.
So does that have anything to do with why they're so quickly rooted?
It could be. That's all I can say. That could be a good assumption. And the medium that we grow them in, of course, has a core in it and other things that they might naturally grow on. So I can't answer that with 100% assurance, but it sounds reasonable to me.
It's my hypothesis, so I guess now I got to test it, get myself some Vireas.
sounds like your next PhD degree.
Exactly. I love the ethos of discovery and learning that Van Veen really embodies. It's a really powerful model to be discovering, learning, and then sharing that out with other people. And I often get impressed at the depth of knowledge that has come from experimentation, really. You've got all those cards that they were writing their data down on, and they were basically doing experiments and figuring out what worked and developing their models and revisiting. So in a lot of ways, it's the heart of scientific discovery, even though it's not in a scientific journal.
Well, her wish, we talked many times in her last days, was that she wanted her knowledge to go on. So the nursery, our goal now is to hold classes there. We have a lot of work to do just to make buildings safe. And, you know, all the greenhouses were glass tops, and some of them are really hard to even get into because they're dangerous. But we're planning a gazebo sort of outdoor building in the old national park style, so we can have outdoor classes and to impart some of this knowledge, especially to children. Anytime I'm showing my grandchildren something about plants, they seem to be really, really interested. There are several schools right in the neighborhood. So our goal is to bring children to Van Veen's to show them and let them plant a cutting and then come back at the end of their year and get their cutting, root it.
How cool. You know,
that's wonderful.
I love that. The younger generation, I think, loves plants in a way that I don't think my generation did for sure. We didn't have plants on our radar as being so important to humankind. And I think the younger generation sees that. They see the impact of plants, not just in the food you eat, but ecosystems and diversity. And so that's really amazing. It's a beautiful model that you have.
Kathy was my educator.
Yeah.
She gave me so much information and she was so generous with how she did it and how she propagated our plants. So I'm forever grateful for her assistance in, you know, that process.
Yeah.
But I also want to say that she sent me a copy of correspondence from my dad that her dad had received. And I've got the other correspondence that my dad, that Van Veen sent, you know, so I've got both copies.
Oh.
And, you know, she was just so thoughtful and keeping in touch. So it was a great loss, you know.
There are so many files down there that I'll keep my eyes open for anything more like that. When I was first going through Ted's desk and locked drawer, I finally had to have a locksmith open the drawer, and a lot of personal things, not business things. But I had the same experience. I opened that drawer and there was a thing said friends, and I pulled it out. And there was a picture of my parents.
You have a new partnership between Van Veen and the American Rhododendron Society. So can you tell us a little bit about that new partnership?
Sure. The new partnership was established because, first of all, Kathy left the nursery to the Rhododendron Society. And then because of the nonprofit status that we had to have to go on with educational programs and receive funding and those sorts of things, the Portland chapter developed the Van Veen Heritage Garden, which is a 501c3. There's a in the negotiations over the property, we developed a conservation easement that says that the property has to stay as an open space, a sanctuary of rhododendrons, a place of education. And that's what Kathy wanted. And that's what we fought for. I mean, Kathy said that many times to me, and there were some other outside forces that were kind of suggesting other things to do with this valuable piece of property, but that's not what Kathy wanted. So it took 17 months, unfortunately, to get to the spot where we finally were assigned the property, and we asked the American Rhododendron Society to be the holder of that conservation easement. In other words, they are our policemen, and we wanted them to be that. If we stray too far away from that promise, then they are there to hold us to that. And so that's our connection with them.
So the Van Veen Heritage Garden is a separate 501c that incorporates the legacy of the Van Veens in a way that's designed to carry it forward so that it can maintain that capacity to do that important work.
That's correct. And the Van Veen Nursery is over time being melded into the Van Veen Heritage Garden. The Van Veen Heritage Garden actually owns all the stock in Van Veen Nursery. So it will all become a 501c3 at some point. And, you know, you can make money and still be a 501c3 as long as the money coming in supports the mission. So the mission is always there. And I always say before our meetings, we need to read the mission.
Yeah, it's a nonprofit. So you want to guide all of your work in that terms.
That's right.
It's not about getting the money. It's about doing stuff with the money. So
absolutely. That's what we're there for.
What kind of, I guess I'll call them services. What kind of services does Van Veen provide to the public that people can pay for that would help keep the mission going?
Well, right now our need is for funding to really resurrect the structures on the nursery and to develop better pathways through this heritage collection of rhododendrons. It is open to the public, and we do have public coming in to walk through and look at plants. And we feel it's important to keep the public involved, and we'll probably develop some gardening space for the surrounding community so they can come in and just be there. We're trying to develop a better volunteer system. There have never been volunteers there, but we have a few now coming in on weekends. And so involvement of the public is really important at this point, and developing resources so that we can make the place safe. Like I say, there are a couple big greenhouses that we don't go in without hard hats on, just because of the glass and loose pieces of glass that can come down. And we've abandoned a couple that we tore down eventually and have replaced. So yeah, there's a lot to do there. If you come to the nursery having never been there before, you'll walk in and you'll just be amazed by the big rhododendrons and the beauty of it in the spring, of course. And then as you get into the structural part of it, you'll say, oh, this looks like a really old nursery. And you're right. It's an old nursery that needs rebuilding. So that's what we're concentrating our efforts on right now.
So is there a pause on receiving cuttings to propagate, or is that still ongoing?
Oh, it's a totally ongoing. They're setting cuttings every week. Just this morning, there were cuttings taken out of Crystal Springs. We're trying to support Crystal Springs and we can. And so one of our plans to educate is to develop about 15 varieties that are iconic to Crystal Springs. Historic plants. We got cuttings this morning off the oldest plant in the nursery. And that's the sort of thing that Ted Van Veen would have wanted us to do. So that, and we've also taken a lot of cuttings out of the Smith Garden, and we are doing those cuttings, I shouldn't say for free, but that's basically what it is. So they are provided to the Smith Garden for their own sales. So we're trying to be inclusive of all the other organizations in our area if we can.
Wow, that's really wonderful. It sounds like it's going to be a lifelong endeavor for many, many more people, not just the Van Veens, the three generations of Van Veens, but now we've got the generations of Mike Stewart and those who come after to basically build this for the future.
Well, I hope so. There's a couple of other people there today that were in their 30s. And that's always really encouraging to see people come in who are really interested to see what was going on. They were from North Carolina, of all places, but writing down things that they were interested in. And who knows? I always tell Jake, don't underestimate anyone who wants to walk around this garden. You never know who you're going to be able to help someday or receive help from. So
that is so true.
How can we get involved? You know, broadly the Rhododendron Society, but more broadly the general community. Is there a campaign that we can participate in?
Yes, we launched a GoFundMe project. And that's our first effort to try to raise money. It was the simplest thing to try to do. You can easily go to it if you just pick up your smartphone and say, GoFundMe, Van Veen Nursery. It will come right up. And there will be lots of articles in there. Our mission statement, the history, some of the stuff I've just told you about. Of course, ways to contribute. And we encourage people to contribute through the GoFundMe project if you can. Many others have sent checks in that don't that aren't reflected on that site. But I ask you to do the GoFundMe if you can, because it encourages others and it shows that people are involved. So that's the very, very easy thing to do. And you can always write a check and mail it to Van Veen Nursery or Van Veen Heritage Garden. They can give you that address when you need that. And the other way is to send your cuttings. Remember, this is about rhododendrons. And if you have something special that you want the world to know about, send them to Van Veen's. We'll root them and we'll send them back to you.
I have sent cuttings to Van Veen before, and they all came back rooted. And it was my first time. So what I'm wondering is, do you guys have a record in that card catalog of how crummy my cuttings were?
No, but I know sometimes, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's, you know, we do the best we can, but it's not guaranteed, you know, living things do pass on. And sometimes you get cuttings that just, how are we going to root this? It's wilted at this point. It's rare, but at times you'll send things out to Minnesota is a good example. And 2 weeks later, the recipient hasn't received the cuttings yet, and they're stuck in some UPS office. That happens once in a while. It happens, you know, it really, really hurts to know that happened. And you just want to go get in your car and drive. I actually considered doing this of all. That shows you how nuts I am. I told Maria, you know, if we have a chance, the next time these cuttings are done, let's just drive to Minnesota, okay? We can get them there in about 3 days in a cooler, and then we'll know it happened. But anyway, yeah. It's no guarantee. Yeah, they come in all conditions. Some are just perfect, and they're like a pencil. They'll get roots on them right away, but others take some time.
Do you have a shorthand version of tips you can give to somebody who's going to get cuttings and send them? What are like the top three most important things they can remember or know to get viable cuttings?
Well, take them when they're in good condition. And that means water them a day or two ahead of the time you're going to take cuttings. Try to take them on the north side of the plant so they're really viable, good green stock and not stressed on the south side where the sun might be hitting them. That's number one. Send a good cutting and you'll have a much better success rate. Also, call the office, call Van Veen's before you send them to arrange for the day you're going to send them and the day that they're probably, hopefully going to be in Portland. You don't want them to come to Portland on a Friday in the middle of the summer. They'll sit in some post office and who knows where, maybe some truck all weekend. So you want to make that arrangement first. And again, there's no guarantee, but most of the time that will happen. We get cuttings in, you know, on the right days, and we can get them set before the weekend. And so they're not sitting out there in a box at the gate or something like that. So those are the two most important or three most important things. Send good cuttings if you can. Talk to Van Veen's about the variety, and they may tell you, Olivia can tell you, that plant is better. You know, if you're going to send PJMs as an example, PJMs root much better later in the fall. Even when the frost is on out here is a good time to take PJM cuttings. Earlier on, they seem to wilt, and then they just take forever to root, and they'll rot away. So get advice from them. Here, I've got X number of cuttings off X plant, a Y plant. When's the best time to send them? Get some information first before you just clip them and put them in the mail. So, yeah.
Before we do the last question, can you just tell us some basics about Crystal Springs? Because when I went there, I fell in love with it. It's an amazing garden. It's beautiful. It's weird. It's mysterious. And now I'm learning that it has this Van Veen connection. So can you just give us a little highlights? What is Crystal Springs? Where is it? Why should we go?
Okay. Crystal Springs Rhododendron Garden was started as the first test garden for the American Rhododendron Society back in the mid 40s. And I think it's about 12 acres, as I remember. It's surrounded by water on three sides, has a couple of big bridges, beautiful bridges. And it has the collection of the original hybrids done by the Hennies, and people from all over the world sent plants there to Van Veen's, basically. And Van Veen's grew them and brought them to Crystal Springs. So there's a great connection there of Van Veen and Crystal Springs. We have just hired our first executive director. So we've had volunteers all these years from the Portland chapter, the Thursday working crew, and a nice group of people for many, many, many years to develop that. Ted Van Veen really was the person who moved it into this next generation of development, replaced the old bridges, developed a wonderful gatehouse, two beautiful waterfalls. It has it's called Crystal Springs for a reason. There's a major springs comes right out of the hillside as you walk in the garden. So that's how it got its name. So yes, there's a great connection there. And Brandon Baker, our new executive director, is moving ahead. We just interviewed for a head gardener position last week, and more volunteers are coming in. So yes, it's a wonderful place to go. Lots of wildlife. We have eagles. We have beaver there as well. And we just decided that if you can't lick them, join them, I guess, was the old phrase. So there'll be some interpretive stuff maybe about why we have beavers over here. But that's a new challenge. We'll let Brandon talk about that sometime. But
wow.
As an old cool house where we put on, we call it the cool house. It's one of those World War II looking Quonset sort of buildings, big building. But we put on major shows there, or trust shows in the spring and blooming time, and fairly major plant sales up until COVID hit. Last year, we did that all online, and it was still quite a successful show and sale. This was the West Coast's first rhododendron venture into a major, major garden. And it's pretty iconic.
I feel like the diversity of things I saw there was very high, possibly because of the climate being amenable. I saw what I thought was maybe a satsuki azalea with different color flowers on the same plant. And I'd never seen one of those growing like out of a pot. So I actually have a lot of photos of that plant. But one thing I wondered when I was there, and now hearing your stories, I do research in collections. And when I was there, I was desperate to find a label. Do you guys have labels? Are they hidden under the mulch, or are those coming, or what's the story there?
Well, it's a major point of discussion. Yes, labeling is really up high on the list, especially since the convention is coming. We used to have labels that could be stolen. And so back in, it's been 20 years ago now, I had the high school ag class here in my town make these steel labels that were about 2 feet long with a big hook on the bottom of them, major steel. You can't bend them. You can stand on them and they'll stay there. And those are buried in concrete and with a label, a botanic label on them. The bad thing about that is they can't be moved. So a lot of the plants are grown over them. So Brandon's looking into new ways of moving those labels that are attached to that stand out. And Maria and I have done some work there in the last couple of months about finding plants that are mislabeled. There are some of those. And I appreciate you asking about that. It's a high priority.
Yeah. Awesome. That brings warmth to a scientist's heart.
Yeah.
What is your own rhododendron origin story? And what's the weirdest, most interesting thing you've done for the love of rhododendron?
Well, okay, that's I started off my association with rhododendrons as a weed puller in my parents' rhododendron nursery in the late 50s. They were conifer collectors and collectors of rhododendrons, and my parents had a relationship with Hideo Suzuki in Japan, and so they were receiving seed way back of Yakushimanums and various other things. And frankly, I wasn't very interested when I was a teenager, and went off to college, got a degree, and became a high school music teacher, of all things. As my parents aged, and I met Maria, who was very interested in plants, fortunately, and we decided that we should expand this small nursery that my parents had, and a great collection, that there was an opportunity there. So I eventually quit my teaching job after 9 years and started expanding the Dover nursery. So this is about our 42nd year. We said we were going to retire in 40 years, and we officially did. It's 80 acres, so it's a lot of land to keep track of, and we still have employees. And, you know, it's one of those things, you never really can close down a nursery that has, we had about 30 acres of rhododendrons and a couple acres of greenhouses that Maria and I have built. And those greenhouses are still here and still have lots of plants. So we have changed that many of those big stock plants into more of expanding the old display garden that we developed in our own collection. So we have now about a 5-acre display area and that includes big species and things that we've seen in the wild on our trips with Steve Hootman. So that was my start with rhododendrons. And then I always recall people that gave us plants over the years. And I think last night's program with the Portland chapter, I mentioned, here's this 30-foot high Acer griseum that Ted Van Veen handed me when I was in my early 20s off his loading dock in a 1-gallon plant, and said, here, you need one of these. And I always remember my dad taking me down to meet Ted Van Veen and going down in the valley to see their big operation. And that's when I started thinking I needed to be in the nursery business, because the people were, that's the big thing for me. The rhododendron business, nursery business, just changed our lives. And we started traveling, doing other things other than educational, you know, what you do when you're preparing for next year to start in school. You do all kinds of prep all summer long. Now we travel and met people and met plants. So that's my association, my beginning with, and I'm so glad I did change that. It's been a wonderful life.
The gift of a gifted plant is one of the joys I have learned since being in the Rhododendron Society. I have plants that different people have given me. I have a bunch of plants that a graduate student I worked with hand pollinated, and I have some in my backyard, and I will always have that joy of that connection and knowing that student and thinking about that student when I look at those plants. And it's really special to have that.
It is really special. And you know, we developed quite a market in the East Coast. We supplied about 70 retail garden centers through those years, 70 every year. Produced, shipped out about 40,000 field-grown rhododendrons every year, every spring. So it kept us really busy, but we would go back to the East Coast with our sales rep and meet customers and that sort of thing, develop those personal relationships. We never wanted to sell to the Kmarts and the big box stores. We sold to garden centers who were more specialty-oriented. So we still have a lot of friends in that business, on the East Coast, especially in Seattle too. But developing friends, and our garden is filled with places like George Woodard collection of some of his hybrids that he sent to us to try. What will they do on the West Coast? And Ron Rabideau and Werner Brock and Hank Shannon and people who produce rhododendrons would send us plants. So Jim Barlip, we had almost an acre just of Jim Barlip's trials over the years, just to see if they were commercially viable. And then we would have Jim come down and walk the fields with us and decide which ones we should plow in and which ones would make it. And that's a valuable part of the business, is communicating with the hybridizers and saying, yeah, this is a winner and these probably aren't. So that's what we did these years, all those years.
What a wonderful contribution to the world of rhododendron.
I think of it as what I received in my lifetime was extremely valuable in terms of friendships and acquaintances. Yeah.
That's really wonderful.
But in turn, we're receiving a lot of that through Van Veen.
Yeah, I hope so. Your second part of your question had to do with
the weirdest or most interesting thing you've ever done for the love of rhododendron.
Oh my gosh. That's a really tough question to answer. I'm not sure I hope you remember Dr. Herb Spaty. Herb Spaty was one of the presidents of the ARS and a good friend of ours, lived down in Salem area. He's still alive. And he just donated his book collection to his son, called and said, can you and Maria come down and get it and do what you want with it? So we've been collecting that, cataloging it. I've got two more boxes of about 15 or 20 boxes of absolutely gorgeous books. And then we'll have them for sale at the convention. And the rest of them probably will go to the Van Veen collection of books, which is a valuable collection as well, for borrowing. Anybody that wants to have a book to read, we'll send you a book. You can send it back later. But wow. I remember Herb Spaty was a very reserved medical doctor. I never saw him laugh a lot, although I knew he had some sort of sense of humor. I asked him one time to look at my hand in a meeting, and I said there was something wrong with it. And I said, what do you think, Herb? And what should I do? And he leaned over and said, you should probably go talk to a doctor. Thank you, Herb. Anyway, the 1995 convention, Maria and I were the chair people of that convention. And I had asked Herb to introduce our first speaker and so forth. And he had just done that. And it was I won't mention names. That person got up and had written a book on gardening. And she was talking about fertilizers and all the soils and all this thing. And she was doing a section. Herb and I were sitting right in the front row because he had just introduced her. And she was doing a thing on cow manure. And she said she was espousing that cow manure was better than steer manure. And Herb and I looked at each other and I leaned over to him, not knowing what he would do. And I said, that sounds a little like bullshit to me. And Herb exploded. He just, and of course, I looked at him and I exploded too. Here we are, the chairman of the conference and the first introducer. And we're sitting there just trying to contain ourselves and everyone's looking at us. Like, what's wrong with those two children up in the front? And you may want to edit that out. I'm not sure that's a contribution to anything.
You finally tickled his funny bone, though.
I sure did. And after that, we remarked about that for many years and always nudging each other about, yeah, that's you know what.
You know what I'm, you know what I'm getting out of that is the most interesting thing you've ever done was make all these friends. You have made a lot of friends, like great friends, lifelong friends.
Oh yeah. And then when you get out in the wild, you go on one of these Steve Hootman trips and you know, you're in little tents and you're hiking and you know, you're in the elements, and so a lot of times it's not very pleasant, just extremely interesting. Then you develop some relationships that are really, really special. I can tell you one other thing about that was kind of funny. It comes to mind. I think we were up in Sichuan in the mountains, and on that particular trip they had guards, and Maria had a GPS in her hand, and anyway, they were curious about these three men came over and kind of surrounded her and said, what is this? What is, you know, they didn't speak a word of English, but, and she pointed at it and she said, oh, it's a GPS. And then she pointed up at the satellites and she says, it comes from the beams of the satellites. And suddenly the chatter level went way up. And I took Maria by the arm and I said, we're going to start walking and we're not looking back. We're just going to keep walking down this valley, you know, down this river, and hopefully things will calm down. And I'm not sure Steve ever really knew much about that. We were all kind of scattered out doing our various hunting for plants, but that was one thing that Maria and I laugh about a lot. I'm glad we didn't end up in some jail someplace for taking what they thought were satellite pictures or something.
That is priceless. You know, that's a contribution in itself to come up with these stories and tell them.
Oh. You're welcome. Always enjoy talking rhododendrons and people. There have been some really interesting people through the years. Yeah.
You know, someday we want to, one of the things we've talked about for this series is doing debates. And we would love to get people like yourself and somebody that you think has a contrasting opinion and have a debate. Let's, you know, I always want, my debate point is always like, my favorite rhododendron is the evergreen azaleas, and that I'll fight somebody over that one. But everybody has their little things, you know? So yeah. I'll just put that bug in your ear. If you know somebody that you often kind of spar with and debate with, it would be fun to have you back for that topic
specifically. You know, it was such a treat to listen to the conversations between Harold Greer and I think it was Warren Berg. I think the two of them sparred quite frequently through their chats on the through internet, I mean through email.
Yeah.
But it was very colorful and they were great friends.
Yeah, it's too bad Kathy isn't here. People often refer to our joint presentations about propagation as a comedy routine. And it kind of was. I mean, Kathy, you could just feed off of her so easily. She was really hilarious in a lot of ways. but anyway, that's an interesting idea. That's exactly what we would do on purpose to kind of, you know, go to two different directions but just to show there were two different directions, but always friendly and kidding and that sort of stuff.
Wow, this has been a really fun conversation. We have really enjoyed talking to you, Mike, today. I want to thank you for coming and sharing all these amazing stories about Van Veen. We are going to have on the American Rhododendron Society webpage, we're going to have lots of links. So we'll have a link to the GoFundMe, a link to do your cuttings at Van Veen and all of that. So everybody who's tuned in, don't worry. We've got that info for you. And thanks.
Mike, it's been just an enlightening hour with you. It's been so informative and just so much fun. Thank you for introducing us to some of the insights of the Van Veen Enterprise. And we hope to speak with you again soon. Thank you.
Well, you're so welcome. And Juliana and Christina, you make these sorts of things really easy. And I appreciate that so much. And it's just a real pleasure to talk about the Van Veen heritage. And I appreciate your support very much. Thanks again.
Curious to learn more about the topics discussed in this episode? Visit our website at www.rhododendron.org. Here, you'll find tons of rhododendron resources, including tutorials, blogs, events, databases, and more. Click on the podcast link on the homepage to find more episodes, suggest a topic for a future episode, and get in-depth information about the people, places, and plants featured here. Until next time, keep carrying that torch for rhododendron, and don't forget to talk endlessly about this podcast to all your friends and family.